You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO at 102.7 FM.
The Missing Women's Commission of Inquiry begins its formal hearings in October. Despite its limited terms of reference and concerns about the appointment of Commissioner Wally Opal, there were hopes that the commission might bring to light some deeper systemic issues that allowed police to ignore reports of missing and disadvantaged women, a great many of them Aboriginal, for years from Vancouver's downtown east side. Many of those were, of course, murdered by Robert Picton. The hopes for bringing to light some of these systemic issues received a blow in late July when the BC government chose to cut legal funding for many of the groups slated to participate in the inquiry. Earlier this month, a group of legal experts from across Canada wrote a letter to BC's Attorney General denouncing that decision. They wrote that the decision to cut the funding, quote, ensures no party will be equipped or inclined to cross-examine witnesses with a view to addressing or revealing systemic issues. It is difficult to conceive of a more substantive, self-interested manner of interfering with the independence of a public inquiry than denying resources to all but police and government and a small group of grieving families. Mary Eberts is a co-signer of that letter. She is a legal scholar and practicing lawyer who for many years has specialized in constitutional law, equality rights, and Aboriginal rights. Mary is a co-founder of the Women's Legal Education and Action Fund and is currently the Ariel F. Sallows Chair in Human Rights at the University of Saskatchewan College of Law. And she joins me on the phone now from Saskatoon. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning.
Now, in reading your letter to BC's Attorney General Shirley Bond, one of the things that struck me was how important you considered the work of an inquiry such as this, or what makes a public inquiry such an important institution in our society.
Public inquiries can delve into areas and delve deeply into areas that ordinary court cases can't reach because there are so many formalities around ordinary court cases that narrow the issues and require very formalistic kinds of conduct. Whereas a public inquiry, given a broad mandate, it can dig into topics that are of enormous importance that would never get an airing in an ordinary court case and very seldom get an airing in Parliament, especially where the majority party in the House does not want the airing to take place.
And why is this one specifically so very important?
There have been reports and concerns about the abuse of Aboriginal women in particular on the downtown east side of Vancouver for almost 45 years. And there have been growing concerns about the disappearance of women along the Highway of Tears. And this is the first time that any government has shown an interest in trying to bring some of these issues to light and give them a hearing. This is what the Opal Inquiry was supposed to do. We have had repeated calls provincially, nationally, and from the international community for an inquiry into why it is that so many Aboriginal women go missing or are murdered. Proportionately in our population, if these were non-Aboriginal women, there would be 20,000 of them who had gone missing or had been murdered in the last 8 years.
And I know Canada has been criticized at the UN for violence against women. Can you talk a little bit about that? You wrote a little bit about that in the letter.
Well, there have been groups throughout Canada, both specifically located in BC and also national groups or national coalitions, who have made shadow reports or specific reports to various UN treaty bodies, like the body that looks after the Convention on the Equality of Women and the Human Rights Convention and so on. And when Canada's conduct comes up for review by these bodies, as it does from time to time in the ordinary course, these citizens groups have been saying, you've got to shine some light on the plight of the Aboriginal women who go missing or are murdered. And time and again, the international community, through the UN treaty bodies, has shone that light and has said there must be an inquiry, there must be some accountability for what has happened to these women. And time and again, Canada and the provinces of Canada have not taken up that request or that urgent suggestion.
Now, even before this, the decision to deny funding to many of these groups was announced, there were criticisms of the inquiry and the choice of commissioner. What were some of those criticisms?
Well, one criticism was that the terms of reference of the inquiry were very narrow. They related only to a small slice of time, and they related specifically to the decision of the government of British Columbia not to pursue certain charges that they had laid against Robert Picton earlier in the day. And the call had always been for an inquiry that would range much more broadly than that and cover the disappearances and the murders of so many Aboriginal women over the years, whereas this focus was very, very narrow. I think that the other big concern was that Mr. Opal had been the Attorney General at some of the material times that would necessarily be inquired into, even in this narrow hearing. His response as Attorney General to the dropping of those charges, for example, you might think people would want to inquire into it, but if he's the commissioner, you just wonder how on earth that's going to happen.
And now with this decision to cut funding, how is that going to affect the work of the inquiry?
Well, one of the things that community groups or public interest groups can do at an inquiry is that they can, they're not grieving families. They are not people who have deep wounds because of what happened to particular individuals. They may be concerned and they may be grieving, and some of them have been friends of the women who went missing. But by and large, their focus is on the bigger picture, and their capacity is to bring to light aspects of the bigger picture. And through cross-examination of the government's witnesses and the witnesses from the police and the Attorney General, and through bringing their own witnesses, these groups can shed light on the propriety of the decisions that were made by government and police officials at the time. There have been, according to press reports, there have been about 2 million documents released. Now, how can 8 grieving families with 1 lawyer review 2 million documents and do an effective job of cross-examining on all the public and other issues that come out of those documents? It just can't be done. You need a lot of hands on this task, and you need some groups that have made it their business over the years to examine these kinds of general issues. And those are the people who got standing from Mr. Opal, and these are the people who were denied funding by the government of British Columbia.
How has the government responded to your letter?
Well, the government has said that they feel that most of the groups that were granted standing will participate, and they mention in particular the families of 14 of Robert Picton's victims. That is true. I mean, they have funded many of the families, and so they will have counsel. But what we're saying is that, you know, important groups have withdrawn, like the Native Women's Association of Canada, which is the only organization which has a sophisticated database of all of the Aboriginal women who have been murdered or who have gone missing over the past number of years, they've withdrawn. Their perspective on BC and on Vancouver and on the nation is therefore not going to be before the tribunal. And everything they have learned from examining almost 600 of these cases will not be brought to bear on cross-examining the evidence that is before the commission. This isn't just a case where, you know, somebody goes in and says a little party piece about some little topic and then goes away. That's what the Attorney General of British Columbia wants. But what really needs to happen is some very acute and critical observers need to get their eyes on all of these documents that are being disclosed and cross-examine the main players in the decision not to pursue Mr. Picton and cross-examine the main players in government decisions of more or less indifference towards what was happening to the Aboriginal women and to other women on the downtown east side who led what the police are pleased to call risky lifestyles.
I know one of your concerns in particular is how the issue of violence against Aboriginal women is being swept under the rug under the pretense of dealing with the issue of violence against women in general. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. You know, when the Native Women's Association database was created, it was created entirely to focus on Native women. And this is not to say that there is not a terrible problem with respect to violence against women in general. But there are special issues. There are specific issues relating to the discrimination against Aboriginal peoples, related to poverty, related to stereotyping of Native women as worthless or as promiscuous, what have you, that really need to be looked at in the context of what has happened in British Columbia and the nation. So the Government of Canada took its database away from the Native Women's Association of Canada, didn't give it any more funding to continue working on that and expanding that database, gave it instead to the RCMP, whose avowed intention is going to be to deal with the question of violence against women, generally speaking. And that, too, is what Commissioner Opal has said, while recognizing that a very high proportion of the women who have gone missing or been murdered are Aboriginal women, he is saying this inquiry is going to be really important on the issue of violence against women. And those actions and actions like them are making disappear, are just obliterating all of the inquiries that should happen about why is it that Aboriginal women are, as one of them has written, a woman from Saskatchewan has written, a population of prey. Why are Aboriginal women the targets of all this violence? And that doesn't mean that other women aren't targeted this violence, but it does mean that BC and Mr. Opal and the nation are missing a very important opportunity to put the question under the microscope of why is it that Aboriginal women are particularly at risk.
Well, I want to thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Well, thank you for giving attention to this really, really serious issue.
I've been speaking with Mary Eberts. She is a legal scholar and lawyer who for many years has specialized in constitutional law, equality rights, and Aboriginal rights. She's also co-founder of the Women's Legal Education and Action Fund and is currently the Ariel F. Sallows Chair in Human Rights at the University of Saskatchewan College of Law.